Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. So, it is the last day of August, but we still are focusing on some back-to-school things. And one of the things that I came across earlier this month was about the opening of a new academy in the Pine Hills area. And, you know, I'm about all things positive in Pine Hills. And so I reached out to the Urban League and because they were the ones I got the information from. And today we have with us Mr. Glenn Gilvain to tell us about what's going on with regards to the Academy and the Urban League. So good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you all on. It's been a while since, you know, I think I might have had you on before in the past, and it's just been a while since I really, I guess, kept track of what was going on with the organization. So let's first of all, though, talk about the school. I think that's just really exciting. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And again, thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, the Central Florida Urban League is alive and well, and we're doing some amazing things. The pandemic has definitely turned a lot of things upside down, but as Grandma would say, you take lemons and limes and you make lemonade and limeade and just add some sugar and everything's good. So when we
That's
saw
for sure.
the impacts the COVID had on our babies of just drastically switching to a virtual environment, I personally and my board did some research and looked at the model and said, what could we do to help our babies get the education they deserve? But more importantly, how do we recover from it? And my board and myself went ahead and said, okay, why don't we look at some of the models that came out of it? We noticed that if you had means, if you came from affluent families, at the beginning, in the middle of the pandemic, what were they able to do? Able to purchase, hire a teacher, have a couple of people in the neighborhood, their kids come together, and create a pod environment. And a pod environment has now been rebranded to a micro school. But the families who come from low-income communities, or predominantly the communities that we serve, didn't have those resources and was able to obtain those quality education. So because of that, the Whitney M. Young Academy was born. And Whitney M. Young is one of the big six power civil rights leaders that fought for, you know, equality and justice during the civil rights movement. And also he was the former National Urban League president and CEO back in the 60s. So we felt it was prominent to utilize his name and his history and his legacy to brand a series of schools that we're creating across the state of Florida to help our kids get a high-quality Montessori education in class ratios of one teacher to 10 students and allow it for our babies to get an education that can really take them to the next level. The last couple of things I will say before you, I switch it back to you. What's really cool about our model, because of our partners and sponsors, we will be able to offer free in-home internet access, high-speed internet access to any student who's enrolled in our school. We know that the bridging the digital divide is needed, and it's huge, and by being enrolled in our school, we'll allow that. Another awesome perk that we know is needed, especially for moms out there and dads and caregivers and grandmas, is that we're offering free extended day education. I don't like the word childcare because we're all about infusing learning in everything we do. So by offering extended day, that allows mom to know that her child is in a safe environment throughout the day with no extra costs. And that's the key. We're not charging anything extra. So no cost for the in-home internet access, no additional costs for the extended day. And then we're just really excited about the launch of this effort and being able to provide students a high-quality, very intentional educational system for our community so that way we can overcome both the achievement gap and the COVID gap.
Now, I mean, this is very, very appealing to me, and I am sure quite a few other people. So that being said, you probably have had people beating down the doors trying to get in. How does the process happen? How are people selected for this opportunity?
So it is first come, first serve, but as we are gaining traction and families want this opportunity, the cool thing is that we're able to expand it. We're working with churches and other community-based partners to set up and establish new pods. As you know, in our community, there's practically a church on every corner. But for the exception of Bible study and Sunday services, it sits vacant Monday through Friday. So our objective is to work with faith-based partners and convert those empty spaces into learning centers and expanding our model there. So as we fill up a pod, which is the 1-to-10 ratio, as we get more, we're looking for faith-based partners to allow us to come in, rent the space. We will pay them to rent the space and allow us to provide the educational model. So here's the exciting thing about our school, because Urban League has always been about economic empowerment. And our board was so gracious to me and my mother. So I always share this thing from my mom, but it's so true. Growing up, she said, baby, ain't nobody going to hire you if you can't read, and ain't nobody going to invest in you if you got no experience. So we took that to apply it, and we applied mom's statement to, in order to really end generational poverty, you need education, you need employment, and you need entrepreneurship. And our school allows us to do those three things. So I'll start off with the first E, education. We are now able to provide a small class size using a Montessori education, which in our community and across the state of Florida, Montessori education has always been out of reach for our community because it's so expensive. Well, because of partners and funders and donations, we're now able to offer that education at no charge as long as they meet the scholarship requirement that the state has. And majority of our community does. So that we're basically able to offer a high-quality education to their child at basically no cost. The other aspect of it is the second E, which is employment. Well, now we have the opportunity to provide job opportunities in our community by training them in social and emotional behavioral technicians, and then also providing just employment opportunities in our community. So that way we can upskill them and give them a career that pays anywhere between $15, $20, $25 an hour once people are certified in Montessori education, which is huge because now we're able to educate the child and then the employment opportunities in our community. Now you're having resources go back into the community. And then last piece is the entrepreneurship piece. One of the things that we're working with entrepreneurs, the schools need to be cleaned every day. So that's an opportunity for us to find minority contractors and businesses to invest in, to come in and be the janitorial services. Our babies got to eat a breakfast. They got to have lunch. They got to have an after-school snack. That's an opportunity for minority businesses to get a contract with us to provide the food and meal services for our kids. We got to market the school right? So there's opportunities for minority-owned businesses who are in the marketing and social media space. So what I'm saying is the beautiful thing about our school model, it allows us to truly reinvest every dollar that we get and really empower our communities from a holistic approach. But more importantly, providing our kids an A-plus high-quality education that they deserve.
The task is awesome, but it seems a little bit daunting. It seems a little bit enormous. What type of support do you have already, and what type of support do you need?
Great question. So it seems daunting, but and from one of your previous interviews that I had, I think you know that my entire career has always been in education policy. I worked at the Florida Department of Education. I had the privilege of serving as a school board member in Pinellas County, served on the great, the illustrious, I know I'm going to lose some of your viewers and listeners on this one, but I did serve as a university trustee for the great FAMU University. So education policy has been my career from day one. And I've been able and blessed to leverage relationships that the Urban League has to offer through partnerships like Spectrum, partnerships like Duke Energy, all of our financial partners, Fifth Third, Bank United, Bank of America, Regents, Wells Fargo. Oh, my God, I can't believe I said Wells Fargo last. Let's just say that they their name is starts with a W, so that's why I was going there. And also many individual people who just step up to the plate and says, hey, you know, I want to be involved in helping close the achievement gap occur. So we're blessed that we have a lot of key partners involved. And I'd be remiss if I didn't even mention the faith-based partners, because without them, there's no sites. So, yeah, it sounds daunting, but because of God and God's blessing and God's ability to open all the doors that he has so far, I think we're moving in the right direction. It's just a matter of now just executing.
So this past year has been a challenge for all of us, but in particular, how has it been a challenge for getting this project moving and for the Urban League as a whole?
So, yes, it has been a very daunting challenge. But one of the things that we were able to do is look at the problem and looking at how we can solve it, better solve it. So this market is heavily based on tourism hospitality, which was decimated by COVID. We surveyed 127 families and also about 30 businesses. And of the surveys with the business owners that we had a conversation with and survey, we asked them, outside of revenue, what was the other reason why you couldn't retain employees? We know revenue is also obviously the main driver. But the other part was, well, the staffing didn't have the technology skills to work remotely. That told us that we needed to spring into action. And we became the first ever Urban League in the entire country out of 93 affiliates in 93 different markets to be the first ever Microsoft Office credentialed organization in the Urban League universe. And we were able to upskill hundreds of families and providing them the tools to compete for the jobs of today and tomorrow. So what's exciting is that we took a problem and turned it around to really help our community get to the next level. We're grateful for Governor DeSantis and his administration for providing us a $1 million grant to upskill families while simultaneously teaching children how to read. We know that the impact of COVID was massive, but what was great about it is that now we gave our community the tools to get the jobs that they need and simultaneously helping their children learn. And what the result of that is the ability to have multi-generational learning. So mom learned while simultaneously the kid was learning. It was amazing. And we were able to achieve that this past year and this summer. And now we're taking it to the next level of just creating these academies in the community so that way more families can get the services that we offer.
And that's good that you mentioned the multi-generational learning because, you know, there was a time where if you were a child, you always looked to the parents for the experience and the knowledge, because they, you know, they had it and they've had it for years. But then with the you know, uptick in technology and everything, the kids oftentimes learn this stuff first before the parents do. You know, the parents are working, the parents are still, you know, trying to be about the basics. And, you know, then up pops technology. And, you know, I'm thinking for a while there were parents that said, okay, I'll deal with that later, not knowing how much it was going to be integrated into their child's lives and into their lives. So, yeah, the fact that you're doing the multi-generational teaching is just a credit to your efforts and your foresight. So.
Actually, I want to give credit to my team because, as you know, no one man can do this work. So thank God for my board. Thank God for my team. One of my colleagues mentioned a family that learns together stays together. So I'm going to see if I can coin that term and make it happen. But, you know, we had parents at our last Microsoft graduation a few weeks ago share their testimony and say that, and as you know, in the summer in Florida, every day, 3:30, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, it's raining. And we had families who would take a bus and travel 45 minutes because they know they don't want to disappoint their children. Or their children are saying, Mom, you know I got to go to the summer camp. We need you to go. So it created an unintended consequence of developing an accountability system for both the parent and the child. So the children were able to engage in a really fun STEM activity where they were using 3D printers and creating these amazing things while simultaneously improving their vocabulary. The old saying is that if you teach a child to read, then you can teach them to learn. They can read to learn, right? So the fundamentals of getting that is key. And then simultaneously, that type of encouragement from the parent, because as they're going through this process, we're along that journey with them all the way along the way, and it's just a beautiful sight to see. So we're just really blessed, and we're excited about expanding this. Our Central Florida Urban League affiliate covers seven counties, and those seven counties is Polk, Orange, Osceola, Seminole Lake, Volusia, Brevard. And we now have figured out our key sweet spot to allow us to now grow and expand into those respective counties. So my goal now is hiring for key community and individuals who want to be a part of this mission, and then start setting up locations in those respective communities, because each community is different. And I want to make sure that we're meeting the needs of those respective communities in those counties.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about one of your projects, the Community Police Academy. How is that going? And, with just things changing a lot, I'm sure that there's been an increased need for it.
Yes, ma'am. Great question. So that's a new program that we're launching. We're getting ready to kick it off post-Labor Day. And the genesis behind it is it really came from attending a police, I think they call it the Citizens Police Academy, where it allows community members to come spend a week or two with law enforcement and get a full understanding of the nuances and the in-depth look of what a law enforcement officer deals with on a day-to-day basis. So in light of everything that's going on, and again, reaching out, speaking to board members and community members, we said, what if we created the inverse of that? What if we were able to create a community police academy, which allows the law enforcement to come and sit with the community and be able to really understand the community that they're signed up to serve and protect? Because once they understand the historical significance of our community, it puts things in perspective, but more importantly, it allows us to develop a deeper relationship with law enforcement. And our ultimate objective is, how do we bridge the gap between law enforcement and our community? So our idea, which we're getting ready to roll out and with law enforcement agencies in the Central Florida market, is to work with law enforcement members, both cadets and before they become fully blown police officers or sheriff deputies, and then also members who are currently active, having them come to a course with us and sitting and meeting with law enforcement community members, getting the historical significance, and then being able to use that as a way to have them understand our community, I truly believe will break down some of the tension that we see portrayed in the media. So I would hope that you will give me an opportunity to come back 6 months and we can talk specifically about this, and I can tell you the good, the bad, the ugly from the outcomes of this program once it is fully launched.
Okay. That sounds like a plan. Please, you know, reach out and let us know. Didn't mean to jump the gun, but I happen to see it on there. And, you know, like I said, just in light of, you know, there's a lot of concerns right now. There seems to be kind of an uptick in our community, especially. We want to make sure that, you know, we are able to kind of do what we can to police ourselves to some extent, so that, you know, we make sure that our loved ones, especially our children, are safe. And then also, too, we can diminish some of this negative perception about what our community is about. So,
absolutely. And I think it starts with us. But
yes.
I also want to make sure that when you have someone who doesn't know the community, to really embrace it, they got to understand the historical significance. They got to know where just to know the flavor and know the nuances of our community. And I think by us leading that discussion and us leading that effort, and I'm not saying the Urban League, I'm talking about the community at large, leading
right.
that discussion, then I think that is the missing piece to community police relations. Right, because it's always been the other way around, where
right.
it's the community and their effort to have us learn them. But I think
mm-hmm.
this is an opportunity for us to do the inverse. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts that this is going to be a national model that other agencies will adopt. And it will be a tool to really, you know, establish trust, which is the key.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that. And yeah, while I would like to see other areas of the country kind of say, take a look at that, I really want our community as a whole, the Central Florida community, to embrace it. Because the reason I say that is because, like, you know, I for the most part, I grew up in Pine Hills and I live in Pine Hills and everything like that. And I know there's other communities that have need of these type of programs that the Urban League has to offer. But I also, when I go out and I'm involved in other things, and I've heard people say, you know, and I sit quiet. A lot of times you have to just be quiet and listen to what people are saying. And I've heard people that say, oh, I never go west of I-4. You know, they do a lot of this and that over that way. So I don't go west of I-4. And it's like, okay, but you expect me to go east of I-4. you know, is it really that much better east of I-4 than it is west of I-4? You know, tell me why. Tell me what the difference is. You know, and then, you know, it's a shame that there's still that school of thought like that. You know, so I want this program and the programs that you do to have that type of positive impact where, you know, the whole community embraces what's going on west of I-4, you know, or even be envious of what's going on west of I-4, you know. I really, you know, the programs that you have really excite me in terms of that. I know you got to go in a few minutes. I wanted to ask you if you could touch on briefly a couple of things, the teen court and the entrepreneur and business plan development, especially
yeah.
now where a lot of people are afraid to kind of go back into a very heavily populated workforce, and they're trying to do stuff maybe on their own.
Absolutely, absolutely. So to your point, come West of 5-4, I'll say they're missing out on a lot of great things because West of 5-4 is where it's at, right? We got
That's
good
right.
food, great people. You know, all the fun stuff is on the West Side, as they say. Throw your West Side up, right? So
right.
I'll be like, hey, don't you're missing out on my friends at the Orlando Economic Partnerships, their tagline is like Orlando. You only know half of it. So if you're only living
yeah.
on the, if you're only on one side, you only know half of it. You're missing out on the best part of it. But to real quick to the other items that we have, Teen Court, the genesis of that, and you're jumping the gun on this one too, because that's also part of that whole community police
that's why you
thing.
Have
We're
to
launching
come back.
That. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. But the intent of it is that we're grateful that our sheriffs and our state attorneys truly believe in second chances and diversion programs, especially as it relates to our youth. And what we are looking to establish post-Labor Day as well is finding a way to create a teen court for in communities that serve our babies. The current teen courts that exist are over in downtown. They're ran by nonprofits, with the exception of the downtown location, if I have my information correct, and I think I do. But what I was informed is that nonprofits in the community can actually set up a teen court, and as long as they have a court-approved attorney and able to recruit volunteers like students, high school students, then you can have a child who unfortunately have made a mistake go through a diversion program like a teen court and be able to be, you know, be able to identify solutions to that mistake. So after observing the teen court here in Central Florida, specifically the Ninth Circuit here in Orlando, one of the things I thought to myself is how cool would it be for young people of color to be a part of a jury, right? Also mm-hmm. a part of the prosecution or defense, and be able to see the law at a young age and understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that if we're able to do that, when we hear jury duty, you don't try to run away. You run to it because, no, think about it. If,
mm-hmm.
if the jury pool is made up of members of the community that don't look like you,
mm-hmm.
I think that could be a problem. When we think about the jury pool in the George Floyd case, it was very diverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people shouldn't run away from jury duty. They should run to it because if we're the largest population that's involved in it, again, if you do the crime, you do the time. But if you really want a fair shake of your peers, then your peers need to be there. So for us, the goal of creating a teen court is to allow young people to understand the importance of it at a very young age, while simultaneously making sure that young people of color who make a mistake, hopefully it's not too severe, to be reviewed by their peers in their community. And I think that will create ripple effects as our community continues to grow and go from there. So that's that. The entrepreneurship program, I received my master's degree in the business school at USF. Go Bulls for those USF fans who are listening. And my master's in entrepreneurship. And I realized after reading a study of the UC Santa Barbara that showed that 40% of black businesses have closed or may close because of the COVID pandemic. 40%,
mm-hmm.
almost one in every two. Well, if you don't have businesses in our community from an economic standpoint, where is the future of the community without those resources? So working with our friends at the African American Chamber here in Central Florida and our friends at BBIF, Black Business Investment Fund, together we have created, together the three of us have come together to create EBO, Enterprising Black Orlando, and with the support of our friend Candace Simmons over at Wells Fargo, and now the Central Florida Foundation, our good friend Mark, we are now able to really come up with the tools to support entrepreneurs and current business owners to really take their businesses to the next level. And I'm beyond ecstatic about that. And our part of it is to help entrepreneurs who need assistance of taking their ideas and putting it on a business plan. Also, our role is to connect entrepreneurs with key partners such as financial institutions. We saw that a large number of the Black businesses who were disproportionate, who did not receive a PPP loan, was because they didn't have relationships, and banking is a relationship business.
Mm-hmm.
So our goals is that if we can help connect those dots and really provide those resources to our Black businesses, then there's a huge opportunity for them to grow and scale, which means there's going to be more jobs and opportunities within our community. And that's how we're going to end generational poverty through the three E's.
You know, we need more time, but that's okay. I appreciate you taking the time to come on. And I'm going to contact you anyway because the Bulls get no love on the sports casting here in Central Florida and in the Orlando area, so we've got to work on that. But thank you very, very much for taking the time this morning. Really appreciate you enlightening us and you know, blessings to you for your efforts, you and your team. And you know, just keep us posted on what's going on and come back anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you, and God bless you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
And we will be right back. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. The number, if you want to join in, you have something that you want to talk about in the next half hour, 516-387-1944. It's G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And we want to thank again President Glenn Gilzean of the Urban League, Central Florida Urban League. And just really, you know, I'm just excited about what they're doing over there. So I'm glad he was able to come and share some of that with you. And I look forward to his return. And in the meantime, hey, Steph.
Hey, Lady G. Good morning, or afternoon, or now.
Afternoon.
To the listening audience. How's things going?
Time flies when you're having fun. Or even when you're not, you're just busy. Yes, but no, things are going well. Like I said, I'm just glad to be able to get him on. I know he's been so busy. I've been working on that, but you know, glad to get him on to talk about what's going on with the Central Florida Urban League. There's a lot of positive stuff coming out of there. So, I want to volunteer too, but I don't think I need to add another thing to my plate right now. But if I could just get the word out and get some other people to help, that would be great. So,
And you know, I think you are volunteering. You're helping in a big way in getting the message out there of the programs they have available that will change our not only our community, but our lifestyle, our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Not just this generation, but the next. I like how they're working with the teen court to be able to instill that knowledge, information, process into
mm-hmm.
the next generation that's coming forth. And, you know, that's where we have to start. We have to start with our young ones, build them for tomorrow because they are our future. And the future gets here. It's kind of like you said when you're having fun. You know, it comes by really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Said, go Bulls. You know, I'm like, oh, my Lord. Do we remember
yes.
when that was? It wasn't that long ago, but it
did
was
you
that
have
long
to go
ago.
There? Did you really have to go there? Okay. Anyway. But the thing that I really was happy to hear about the multi-generational teaching on technology, that is
mm-hmm.
so key because I can't imagine being a parent and a child comes up and asks you a question and you're just kind of powerless to really provide any kind of knowledge, some kind of knowledge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were very good in terms of keeping up on current events and you know, being able to answer questions or at least get me the answers that I need. But in this day and age with technology ever progressing, it is tough. So the fact that they are like, okay, we're not just teaching the kids. We are also going to teach the adults, too. We're going to get everybody on the same page. I think that is just incredible, and I'm so proud of them for doing that.
That is so true because more and more, and particularly with the COVID-19 situation, we are
mm-hmm.
finding grandparents having so – when we talk about multi-generational – we're missing that generation in between the grandparents and the child or the students who the grandparents are now ended up raising, and this has been a phenomenal in our community for a while now,
mm-hmm.
where either through drugs or early death that grandparents have had to step in and take over the responsibility of that missing link, the parent. So I think that is absolutely phenomenal that they are doing that because it does meet the needs of the communities now. COVID-19, I was reading this morning where another mother that was a nurse passed and she left a baby. Her husband is now in ICU. So there's the potential for this child to lose both parents. And again, we end up with the situation of a grandparent having to step forth and raise. So, yeah, that generational knowledge, multi-generation, is so key because it's stressful. I know when I was teaching, it was stressful for my parents who were in that situation because they were having to cope with the loss of their own child, the responsibility of being responsible for another child, a young child, who generally comes without financial resources, too. So you know, a lot of what I like, too, what they're offering this is that the cable companies are now stepping up and offering the Internet service to make technology possible in the home.
Well, like I said, we're going to have Mr. Gilding back on, and I look forward to that to give us an update. And I also highly encourage everybody to go to their website. I've posted it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. So please go and volunteer in any way that you can or donate in any way you can to help their efforts. In the meantime, we are still keeping the victims of Hurricane Ida in prayer. The death toll has reached 4 so far. There was a highway collapse in Mississippi, and I know at least 2 people from that were killed just because of the flood waters from Hurricane Ida that affected. There's millions without power there and still a lot of flooding. And unfortunately, according to someone with Gas Buddy, which is an app that, you know, for to find, locate gas and stuff like that.
Right.
They say expect gas prices to increase between 5 to 15 cents per gallon because of Hurricane Ida. Also, too, I found something about there's some FEMA assistance possible for Hurricane Ida victims. So I'm going to, I mean, I know there's not that many people here from Louisiana that might listen to my show, but if you know of someone, I'm going to go ahead and try to find that information and post it on the G's Power on Facebook page so that you can pass it on to family and friends that may be in need of help in that area. But, you know, I mean, just, you know, pray and you know, hopefully as we get, we are able to identify where the appropriate funds should go, you know, because, you know, a lot of times you get a lot of gouging. As soon as we can identify where some of these funds can go, I'll try to get that posted, too, as well. So.
Yes, you know, I remember when Katrina hit, and a lot of families here in Florida had family relatives that they were searching for in New Orleans. And it was just so eerie when this happened on the 16th anniversary. So, yes, I think a lot of our friends and families are going to need assistance from us here, just as we need assistance from others when, because hurricane season's not over.
No. And please ask them to be careful. If you know anybody there, I just also saw an article where a 71-year-old man was attacked by a gator in floodwaters from Hurricane Ida. So, and I'm not sure. I see three different headlines. One says attacked. One says missing. One says dead, presumed dead. You know, there's going to be a lot of that, too, because a lot of the wildlife is going to be disoriented and displaced, too, from this.
Wow.
There's so much to kind of deal with right now for our loved ones in that area. So just, you know, please keep them in prayer. If you know of anybody, check on them, you know, make sure they're okay, see what can be done, see what you can do for them. So.
Most definitely.
Yes. So, Steph, I talked yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance. I know you've been busy and didn't get a chance to listen maybe, but I did talk a little bit about Afghanistan yesterday with Dr. Harvey Kushner, who is I've had him on before. He's kind of like our terrorism expert. So, you know, and today, I guess, is the deadline, and I think they said actually yesterday, though, last plane left from over there. So we've got to keep our citizens that are over there as well as the citizens over there that are in need of our support. We got to keep them in prayer and just hope that maybe a new strategy will develop that will, you know, help get the rest of those people out of there, or if not, at least them protected in some way. Maybe there's, you know, I know there's some doubt in terms of the Taliban's intentions, but, you know, God touches even the hardest of hearts. And, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, whatever they're trying to portray as a new and improved Taliban may actually be a new and improved Taliban in time. I mean, like I said, you can't teach the old dog new tricks, but, you know, at the same time, you know, we all seem to try to want or hope for second chances. So, you know, maybe things will change.
The key word there is new and improved. It does improved mean they have improved on their old ways, or have they switched to a more conventional world partner ways? You know, that's when they say they have improved, I say the key word is which way, you know, which way have they improved? I'm interested in knowing the story behind those who were left behind. Or I don't like the word left behind either, because left behind to me sounds like we intentionally left them. And I don't mm-hmm. know if that was the case. So I did not like that. Those that are still there, what is the story behind their ability to remain there? That when we were able to bring out so many other Afghans, how is it, and they say that number that's still there is somewhere between 100 to 200, but less than 200. So they say closer to 100. But let's err on the side of caution and say it's closer to 200. What is their story? Why is it that they were not able to make it to the plane that left? So that is interesting, and I think before a lot of judgment is cast on on the military for those people not being on board mm-hmm. of any of the flights that left, what is their story? So I'm very cautious when people say, well, you left behind. We know they are still there, but did mm-hmm. we just leave them? I don't know that to be factual. And the key thing to that was the administration saying, we made available the means for everyone who wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the key word was wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people who marry Afghans while they was there and decided to stay. There's some people who may have American citizenship, but their roots, their family ties are there. So they are part of a movement that is determined to make things better or improve for the better functionality of that government. They may have been still there as consultants to bridge this worldwide relationship with partners. So
right.
say that those are the stories that I want to know. What are the stories behind those who are still there?
Yeah. And I am particularly concerned about the women that are over there. And that, you know, just I hope that all for progress has not stopped for them. And I know there are some, I guess you could say, steadfast and hard people in that area that, you know, just as any other person that adheres to the basic principles of their religion, there's a hard time kind of reconciling, forward progress with certain principles and precepts, you know, with doctrine, you know. So I'm just hoping that, you know, there's a way to kind of balance that out that is not going to impede for progress for the women over there and also, I guess, jeopardize the faith and culture over there at the same time, you know.
I agree with that. That's going to be a very difficult thing because we know they have not progressed as modern day as we in America. Just think about it. We in America just celebrated the 100th anniversary, now the 101 year anniversary of women receiving the right to vote. And
right.
look how we women are still underrepresented in the political process and still in the workplace with the pay. So we're still fighting equal pay, so we know they're going to be behind.
Right. And not just in our country. I mean, we're dealing with that, but also we're still dealing with trying to solidify our rights as African Americans. You know, we're still dealing with voting rights. I'm like, wait, how many decades? No, not years, decades has it been, and we're still having to fight this fight. For what? I mean, this is such a contradiction, you know. all men are created equal, but except, you know, and it's like, no, that's not what it said. It didn't say but or except. It didn't say that. First of all. Well, not first of all. First of all is who gave, you know, you're not God. Who gave you the right to decide what person is better than another person and who gets these rights and who don't get these rights? You know, that's a God decision as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. You know, I sent you an article that CNBC ran this morning about this same issue, about the women and children. Children in the fact that are they going to allow the schools to remain open so that the children can receive a proper education? And then we always say proper education, but what does that really mean?
What that's another argument.
So, but are schools, are that availability going to be open and open to all children, to male and female? Or will it be strictly male and will it be strictly military type of training? Again, so the UNICEF is, the article is talking about what UNICEF is really worried about, the Taliban owning up to some of the conditions that was stated. You know, people, we think that, oh, just an abrupt decision was made just to pull out. But throughout the years, the different administrations, deals have been slowly in the process. So when America just did not leave and just say, here, here's your country, bye, they did not expect for the president to fold as fast as he did. I think that was the only uncalculated move in that, that they expected it to hold for a little bit longer. So it threw our evacuation process to have to come up a little faster than probably calculated. So, but the article does a good job in talking about things just like that, Gretchen, that the deal, part of everything was probably a bike deal, that the women would be protected. The women would be allowed to still work as teachers, healthcare workers, doctors, and not with that mentality that your place is in the home, barefooted. And as now, this is my being American saying now, at home, barefooted and pregnant, and not only at home but in the kitchen. So it's a very good article there.
Right, and I think I just found that article and just posted it on the Jesus Power Hour Facebook page, so I'll have to take a closer look at that myself. So here in Florida,
And you know, the other part
please, yes.
The other part of that that we're going to have to be concerned with here in America with this, children, there was the report, there were children that made those flights without their parents.
Yes.
So there's a whole community of children that they're now gathering together. I forget the name of the organization that they have made responsible for these, that have stepped up to become responsible for these children, because they're going to have to be placed in our foster care system and adoption system. So or try to find their families. I don't know what kind of documentation was placed on them to unite them with someone, because I have not delved deep into the study of that. It is on my agenda. That's another interesting point that we're going to have to get into later.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I was just happened when you, after you mentioned that first UNICEF article, it came across when from a couple of days ago that talks about more and more children are being like displaced outside of their birth countries. It's a UNICEF article. It said 35.5 million having lived outside of their country of birth since 2020, an additional 23.3 million displaced internally that's within their country.
Wow.
Yeah. So I came across that, and I just posted that on the G's Power Hour Facebook page as well. It's very disturbing. And not just talking about Afghanistan. There's some other areas too. But like I said, I did post that on there, and we'll be taking a look at that as well. So, we're still fighting the mask fight here in Florida. Interestingly, there's, I guess, a battle in some other states in terms of the mask mandate in those states and how they may unfairly impact children with disabilities.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying that right now our state is not necessarily involved in it because of the ruling the other day that turned over the mask ban, the governor's mask ban. And so if it wasn't for that, we probably would be in that group of states that's being sued for banning masks or whatever because of the impact on children with disabilities. But I keep wondering if...
That was the whole suit. A parent of disability students did bring the suit, and that was part of what started everything rolling and why the judge ruled the way he was, because children he saw and they were able to prove that children with disabilities were being negatively impacted. So with the negative impactment upon any segment, you have to look at that and say, is that fair to all parties involved? And that suit was able to show that the students of disabilities were negatively impacted in different ways because of the ban. And so you had to protect, and I'm glad that the judge did see that there need to be a ruling to protect all students, those with and without disabilities, equally, and that the mask wearing, when done properly, and mask made a certain way. I know our time is short here, a couple of minutes left, but it is key that people understand those masks for everyone need to be made out of 100% cotton with a good filter between, a tight netted filter between, and the inner and outer layers need to be 100% cotton. So there needs to be three layers. That way a child and anyone can breathe easily. If you're wearing a mask and you're saying you can't breathe, check to see what the mask is made of. Is it polyester? Does it have a polyester plastic lining in it? Those will not allow you to breathe properly. The fabric is not made to breathe. It's made for, not polyester, so we don't have wrinkles, okay? Cotton will be full, people, but it will also allow you to breathe. So the students need proper masks, and they need to be fitted properly. And when those things happen, masks work to save lives.
Okay. Steph, as always, appreciate your joining us today. Stephanie Dukes, my friend, fellow Bull.
Thank you.
You'll be hearing more from Stephanie soon in the future. But anyway, we're going to go. Thanks for joining us. Have a blessed day. Talk tomorrow. God willing, be well, be safe, be blessed. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.